For Jell-O now. Who wants Jell-O? Huh? Yeah. It's funny because our first conference, 1994, in this very room, in fact, I wasn't in that room. Does anybody remember? We started the conference. I think it was in Area B, actually. That was our main speaking room, and we used this room just for computers to, like, hook up networks. We had one track. We ran for, like, 6 hours a day, 2 days. And it all started with a strobe light, and you couldn't see who was on the podium, but it was a Jello Biafra speech that was being played saying that America is under martial law, and all the rules that you had to now follow, regular sport programming will be continuing as normal, but gathering on the street is illegal, and all sorts of other things are illegal. Just shut up and comply, and you won't get shot, and things like that. It was a great way, I think, to start. And then the lights came up, and it was Robert Steele behind the microphone, ex-CIA guy who is here today as well and has been at every conference since. And it's just really cool that in 2000 we actually got the real Jell-O Biafra to give a keynote here. And I just thought that was so awesome to have two worlds come together. And Jell-O has been back every conference since. And that's the kind of thing that I hope to foster. I hope you all come back to every conference after this one, and that we keep getting more and more people from different communities involved, because there's a lot to talk about. There's a lot to learn, and there's a lot to be angry about, too. And that's sort of what it's all about. Jell-O, you know, is making music again, which I think is pretty damn cool. He's recorded two albums with the Melvins, and he's also got a new spoken word album coming out this fall. It may actually include material from right now. It's called In the Grip of Official Treason. So look forward to that. But for now, right now, on stage, let's welcome Jell-O Biafra.
All right, thank you once again. I have to squat down like this. So, man, W. Bush and always lean over like this. You disarm or we will.
Actual quote. Okay, if there's any more light on my paper, that would help. But anyway, thanks for coming back and putting up with me. As many of you probably know, I'm one of the least technically literate people in this place. Of anybody, but there's many things that I like to ram down your throats as something maybe you ought to know here. And yesterday in this very room, I walked in on the second half of a panel called Privacy is Dead, Get Over It. And I guess it really is, if the guy who was supposed to moderate the panel was taken out of this conference in handcuffs by the FBI. And still, apparently, no explanation as to where Stephen Rambam is or why they took him away. Was it a theatrical stunt pulled by his friends? Apparently not. And it's just kind of creepy in a way to know that people who could take you away at any time, and then you could wind up becoming an Alito Frito over time if they just forget to give you a hearing as a suspected terrorist or torture you at Gitmo or whatever. You know, where does that stop? So I felt more of a spook-heavy and right-wing vibe at this Hope than I've ever sensed at any of the other ones. Although some of that is not necessarily bad, I think it's important to come face-to-face with people, especially people who have a lot of power, know what power works, and know that these people really exist and they really do think this way. When I used to get asked to come to New York for panels on censorship in music, when Tipper Gore was riding high and everything, and I always said, you know, don't just have a bunch of people who are First Amendment advocates on the panel. You want a good panel, have somebody for the religious right on there, too, because otherwise nobody's going to believe me when I start describing what these people are like. You have to see them in the flesh. And basically, what the underlying premise that I got off of the privacy is dead, get over it, is, you know, you people may think you're so smart in thwarting the system, but we're way ahead of you. And we in the spook community can get anything we want and on any of you and use it for whatever we want at any time. And then there were people lined up to ask questions, and they were very detailed, almost fascinated. Yeah, man, privacy's dead, total surveillance. That's kind of cool. I want to know more. I want to get a job in that sector and make some money and spy on everybody who made fun of me in school or whatever. I mean, I'm surprised they don't have recruiting tables yet, but I guess I've given time. I mean, how many of you have gotten over that privacy is dead? All done with that. Oh, that's smaller than I expected. Well, if there are FBI people and people from the intelligence community who feel we should be using all our skills to track their idea of a potential terrorist, in this room, I do have a message for you. Here is my greeting for the FBI today. Hi! Wanna sell me on eBay? There. You want to keep freedom of expression alive, you kind of got to keep it lively, right? Well, there you go. But overall, I mean, as much progress as has been made and how many really successful efforts people have made at circumventing and thwarting the system, the government and corporate hackers are winning hands down, manipulating tools that could be used for the public good, for their private evil, basically. And every time you swipe the convenient little card at the store, the bar, the fast track, the pharmacy, they are winning. So I had to ask myself, okay, if privacy is dead, am I over it? You know, this has been on my mind a long time, actually, ever since my senior year in high school, Watergate and some of the CIA scandals had gone down, and they trickled all the way down to the public school system, where all of a sudden students were invited to come see their personnel files. So, of course, I had to see mine, and there all in a row were my school pictures, starting in first grade, real high contrast, so they looked like mugshots and everything. And in those files, the teachers can write anything they want about you. And even in first grade, I was written up as a bad seed for future teachers to watch out for. Thought, oh, I thought that teacher liked me. I still like school in first grade. Oh, no. And then a little bit later, and I would guess 76 or 77, when the Senator Frank Church Committee was exposing a lot of CIA abuses, assassinations, drug experiments, and much more, there was a sidebar in the still interesting and semi-independent magazine called Newsweek, saying, you know, if you like the CIA, you're going to love this little agency. And they had a sidebar on the NSA, which I had never heard of before, and said, even then in the 70s, the NSA's mission is domestic surveillance. So all this, turn that phone off or it's going out the window. Everybody check your smell phones now, or I'm going to feel an awful lot like Beavis and Butthead in the, oh, there it goes again, in the cartoon. Oh, there it is. You bought a Dead Kennedys ringtone off MTV? Well, for those of you who don't know, Dead Kennedys has completely been hijacked and stolen, so I have no say in anything that goes on with that part of my life because the rest of the band got really, really greedy and went to big corporate lawyers and sued me in large part because I didn't want to put Holiday in Cambodia in a Levi's commercial. So any dead Kennedy... And I don't regret taking that stand at all, but it has been the worst experience of my life because they lied like crazy in court, claimed they wrote all the songs, and they conspired to steal all these royalties from them, even though, yes, there was a little accounting error, but I paid them in full before they sued. And if I hadn't kept the albums in print all these years, it'd be just another Killed by Death band with rare records sold on eBay. And they were not poor. They were rolling in money, but that wasn't enough. So now, Viva Las Vegas, our version has turned up in American Idol. And they just signed with a great big Hollywood manager who I believe had Britney Spears, among other things, listed on his resume. In what capacity, I don't know. Another one at that agency dealt with sports stars and things. What do you think they're going to get out of this? And 20% of what's left of my dead Kennedy's money is going to this guy who was hired behind my back. So expect more ringtones. Expect more commercials and fake reunion shows with my picture in the ads, which they've been doing for 5 years now. And if you give a damn about, you know, this kind of an activist radical band being trashed by people who might as well be Republicans now and despise everything the band ever stood for, you know, spread the word as to what a fraud many of us think this is. Ringtones weren't my idea. Where are we here? Oh, yeah, have I gotten over privacy? The effect of seeing that file had on me as a 17-year-old, I thought, okay, I'm about to leave this place, and this file was obviously be prepared to be sent somewhere after I left school, after we all leave school, probably to some federal surveillance law enforcement branch. So I figured, okay, they already know who I am. I'm just going to cause more trouble and more trouble. And punk rock was starting up, and I found a great way to cause trouble and make noise that I really liked at the same time. You know, privacy was something to be careful of, and my love for some kinds of pranks and creative crime had to go out the window as I got better known. And then in San Francisco, 1982, a good friend of mine was raped in a doorway downtown in San Francisco, went to the police for help, big mistake, and they said they'd take her anywhere she wanted to go, so she read off the address of my house. The cops pull up, oh, what do you know, Jello Biafra's house. That was kind of scary. Especially because somebody who was then unknown had set off a stick of dynamite in front of the house a little while earlier, that if anybody had been standing near it at the time, they would have been blinded or lost a limb or something. But, you know, it creeps me out when I find out you can go to maps.google.com with anybody's address. No, not just get the address, but get a satellite picture of their house. You know, and having had other violent attacks over the years, that does kind of scare me. And I know that if they do start rounding people up for, we'll go to this. You know, how many of you heard in January that the Bush administration quietly gave another huge contract to their buddies at Halliburton, $185 million, to build temporary detention facilities inside the United States? For, quote, an emergency influx of immigrants, natural disasters, or, quote, to support the rapid development of new programs. What new programs? I mean, that was barely reported in the corporate media at all because Angelina and Brad's precious baby was far more important, relevant news, but I think you see my point. But I'm thinking even now, with that hanging over all our heads, we still have constitutional rights, and they already know who we are, so so don't just start shriveling away out of fear of what Attorney General Gonzalez and Samuel Alito are going to do to us all. Get louder and louder and louder. Cause as much trouble as humanly possible. I mean, I know that even if I faked a fundamentalist religious conversion and had Oliver North for sainthood tattooed on my neck, I'm still going down. So I might as well keep doing what I'm already doing. And if they know what I'm doing, c'est la vie, it's on a lot of the albums anyway. Being watched, who knows? New girlfriend, new kinks, just do it with the curtains open like we always do. You know, every scandal that would bring some people down, I've already done. So, fine. And, of course, it creeps me out, too, and I'm sure this has been discussed in many of the other things, how AT&T and the other, you know, big phonies have allowed the NSA just to look at everybody's email, not just suspected foreigners or anything, but everybody. People are rightly up in arms over this. A little-known poll, I believe it was CNN or Zogby, had a majority of Americans thinking that if Bush was really doing this, or he lied about the weapons of mass destruction, either one, there have been two polls, majority of the respondents said Bush should be impeached. You know, you don't hear that. You don't hear that when the things, oh, why can't the Democrats find a message in Hillary Clinton? Oh, we have to get more churchy, and we have to have more anti-abortion people to take back the red states, the blue states, the red states, the blue states, the red states. That cartoon stereotype is only about 3 or 4 years old. I never heard of it before. It makes about as much sense as measuring the issues that affect our lives as a battle royale between donkeys and elephants. And I've noticed even before the Bush mob got in that there's been different corporate media surveys and research organization surveys that kind of dispel the whole blue state, red state myth altogether. I mean, I guess New York is supposed to be a blue state, I guess, and you look up in the sky and, you know, if the air is actually clear, it does look kind of blue usually, so maybe they're right, but, you know, I look up in the sky in Texas, it's not red. Sidewalks aren't red either, and neither are a lot of the people. I mean, personally, I prefer green states. Although, you know, look around a lot of states today, they look a lot more like a colostomy bag or something. But check out some of these results over the years. 99, a certain conservative publication polled people's attitudes about corporations and big business and said that 60% of Americans in both the blue states and the red states thought that big business has too much power. And that they are getting increasingly frightened of their products, and that their CEOs make way too much money. And that was Business Week. Yeah. And a cover story, too much corporate power, and they said, hell yeah. You know, Ralph Nader had great fun with that in the 2000 campaign. This makes Business Week, this puts Business Week to the left of the Democratic Party. Which it did. Bunch of interesting ones around 2004. Of course, another myth that drives the Hillary monster's churchy push and all is that Kerry lost the election because the Democrats weren't on top of moral values. Moral values. Family values. You know, the kind where they say the life of the unborn child is sacred, but once they're born, fuck 'em.
We're not paying any taxes for schools or playgrounds or medical care or welfare for the single moms, but we'll build you more prisons.
Family values. But that whole myth that Bush won on moral values of all things was based on a CBS poll of 7,500 people where only 22% said moral values and 78% didn't. But since they'd skewed the poll and divided Iraq and the war on terrorism into two sections, which came in at 19% and 20%, a total of 39, 22% must mean that most people decided moral values. And five of those 22 percentage points were people who voted for Kerry, not Bush. And then out come these studies, many of them from the Pew Foundation, and Stanford University was involved in some of this, University of Akron. They poll the blue state and the red state people and got, you know, two-thirds yes, we should fight poverty by taxing the rich. Two-thirds yes, we should repeal Bush's tax cuts for billionaires. Two-thirds yes, everybody should be entitled to see a doctor and have health insurance. Over three-quarters, yes, the government should do whatever it takes to protect the environment, even if it means a temporary loss of jobs. Percent, abortion should be legal in some circumstances. Legal in almost all circumstances, 55%. Raise the minimum wage, and everybody should be able to get a job from the government who wants one, 86%. And 60%, and these included some CNN exit polls on the 2004 election day, said they were okay with gay people having the same rights as everybody else, including the right to get married or form a civil union. Similar numbers now against the war in Iraq, in favor of impeaching President Bush. Recent one I pulled off of CNN and MSNBC, 54% want a third party in this country. Perhaps they should mention the existence of some of them in their programs. And 63% opposed wasting time on a constitutional amendment to ban desecration of the American flag. If you ask me, nobody has desecrated the American flag and everything we pledge allegiance to thinking it stands for more than the Bush administration themselves. Wars, murders, what are we doing in the concentration camp business? That's what Guantanamo Bay is. It is a concentration camp. Got another one, at least one in Afghanistan, holding over 10,000 people incommunicado in Iraq as suspected terrorists. And the Pentagon even admits that no more than 10% of the people we've kept in Gitmo under horrific conditions for 5 years now probably aren't terrorists at all. They're just afraid to admit that and let them go. And then they say, oh, no, no, if we send them back to their countries, their government might torture them. We're humanitarians by leaving them out in what looks to me from the photographs in a Time magazine article that was pro-Gitmo. You know, they look like the outdoor chain link fences at a really nasty dog pound. Here they are in the Cuban tropical heat that was vastly worse than what we have right now. Long sleeves, hoods tied over their heads all day. You know, waterboarding, too, you know, where you just ram somebody's head into the water until they're about to drown and think they're going to die. Imagine how painful that is. Pull their head back out, and right when they can finally breathe, do it again. And this Time cover story, Detainee 063, the 20th hijacker. How many 20th hijackers does that make? How our heroes at the government and our Jack Bowers or whatever, our manly Kiefer Sutherland men. After all, you watch 24, torture's so cool because he's such a hero. That gets people into it, right? Joseph Goebbels would be proud. Anyway, how they got him to talk. And it talks about waterboarding, keeping him up and interrogating him 20 hours a day, every day, sicking dogs on him, making a devout Muslim wear women's clothes and do doggy tricks and stuff. Yeah, it seems to me that isn't that what a lot of good people lost their lives for in World War II in order to stop the Nazis from doing to us? you know, what were, you know, where am I on this thing? Oh, yeah, I mean, also, yesterday at the Privacy is Dead panel, the guy I think was sitting over there named Jerry Keenan said that he's been hired to compile profiles of every suspected terrorist in the world. Fine for the real ones. I don't want to die either, but what about the other 90% of the people who wound up in Guantanamo Bay? Who decides who's a terrorist? Nixon, and I think even LBJ and J. Edgar Hoover tried that with the FBI in a program many of you know called COINTELPRO to sabotage and even kill leaders of the Black Panthers, the American Indian Movement, Puerto Rican separatists, and then a decade later, a mysterious explosion in a car where Earth First activist Judy Berry and Daryl Cherney were in, and Judy nearly died, where her estate and Daryl got $4 million damages from the FBI, but they still won't admit they had anything to do with the bombing. Arnold Schwarzenegger has been caught using the California National Guard to spy on suspected terrorists, such as the Raging Grannies, and the California Nurses Union, so for pointing out how cold-hearted Arnold is to try and terminate their jobs and hire unskilled workers just so he can wipe out their unions and all. How many of you were in Washington, D.C. last September 24th for that big Operation Ceasefire march against the Bush administration? Or were you all hiding there living it virtually on the net in the privacy of your own digital cocoon, making a difference by staring at it on a screen? Oh, it's fun to show up at these things, meet new, interesting people, especially if the only people of the opposite sex you're interested in are imaginary MySpace friends online or something. Sometimes hot-headed, too, but aren't we all? That's half the fun. Anyway, I mean, I had a great time there. I had to MC the After March concert, and wow, what an interesting backstage that was. Oh, there's Ian MacKaye. Oh, there's Al Sharpton. Oh, there's Cindy Sheehan. Oh, there's Joan Baez. Oh, there's the Bouncing Souls. There's Le Tigre. There's Maxine Waters. There's Jesse Jackson, all kinds of people mixing and matching. Brother Wayne Kramer was there, too. But the highlight for me, after I'd long blown my throat having to announce everybody for my 11-hour workday, so I see this real young, pretty young kid, early teens, I can't remember what gender, holding up a sign with a great big grin on their face, Dick Cheney kills kittens. There was another sign. Will somebody please give the president a blow job so he can be impeached? Or another real good one. No Iraqi ever left me on a roof to die. I think that's worth going into, too, for a second here. Why did FEMA fail so badly? I went to New Orleans last March, about 6 months after Katrina and the horrible flood wiped out so many people's homes and lives, and I was expecting something horrible, and it was vastly worse than I ever thought possible. You know, block after block looked like a tornado had hit yesterday. Looked like a war zone. Looked like the troops who trashed Fallujah had been through there. You know, a lot of places, all the belongings out in the sidewalk, windows blown out. Look inside. Sometimes you see the mud line, the flood line. There's a dresser and there's a pictures of families still up there. You know, every one of these houses was somebody's life. And this went on for mile after mile after mile after mile. The point where by the time we got to Chalmette in the St. Bernard Parish, I just felt like sitting on the curb and crying or something. But why FEMA failed is a little bit more complicated than just, Brownie, you're doing a heck of a job. Now, granted, Brownie was a colossal incompetent like the ones that fill so many upper echelon Bush administration positions, because Republicans are so greedy. Who's going to leave a $5 million a year lackey Wall Street job to go reorganize the Postal Service? They have to hire 10th echelon, you know, clowns.
Brownie, doing a heck of a job.
And Brownie's qualification to run our disaster preparedness response nationwide was formerly running the International Arabian Horse Association. A lot of you probably knew that, but how many of you knew why he wasn't there anymore? He was fired for stealing. That made him qualified for a high job in the Bush administration, didn't it? Yeah. I mean, he was the former college roommate of the previous crony Bush put in there, Joe Albaugh, who, you know, helped run Bush's campaign in 2000 as the ones who supposedly doctored Bush's National Guard record so he didn't look quite so much like the chicken hawk that he is. And Albaugh, by the way, FEMA wasn't enough money for him, so he left to start a company called the Shaw Group to cash in on FEMA contracts. 200 million of them from New Orleans alone. But also, what also went down with FEMA that a lot of people don't know is starting in the Reagan years, there was a push from above to transform the Federal Emergency Management Agency into a martial law agency. The head that Reagan put in 82, Louis Jafrida, came up with this plan called Continuity of Government, or COG, which detailed how to suspend the Constitution for the purpose of declaring martial law, and if we needed a shadow government because something happened to the real one, here's the names of the people we're putting on it, and they included Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld. Then a couple of years later, another proposal came through called Rex 84 for mock war games against the American people, 400,000 imaginary detainees to make sure we had enough camps to lock people in if somebody protested a then-planned invasion of Nicaragua. The guy who gave us Rex 84 was Oliver North. And then Hurricane Andrew hits while Daddy Bush is president, and it doesn't just wipe out the homes and livelihoods of poor African Americans. Oh, my God, rich white people got hit, too. Where's FEMA? Where's FEMA? Look what's happened to our homes. Well, we got all these lists on which one of you to lock up in a camp, but we haven't the faintest idea how to bring you any water. Clinton tried to reform the agency and claimed that he told Bush eye to eye that this is the one agency you should not politicize, but maybe the name of the agency was so long Bush couldn't remember it, I don't know. And
Uncle Dick just picks everybody anyway. I'm just the CEO, President. I don't really do anything like that. I don't know who half those people are.
But then I found a report that in the middle of the flood crisis, who should call up the governor of Louisiana, Kathleen Blanco, but Karl Rove, demanding she turn over, sign over all military authority, including the state's National Guard, to the Bush administration, so they could then take over and fix the flood by declaring martial law. To her credit, she refused. But then I find out from the locals that among the other weird things going on down there that a lot of people never found out about, like the hospital ship floating on offshore that was never used, Fidel Castro putting his rapid response disaster relief team, which is considered one of the best in the world. They get hurricanes all the time there. Sitting ready to go at the Havana airport for 2 weeks, and Condoleezza Rice says, "Oh no, we'll just use American know-how." Results are all around us. And then one of the locals told me, "Yo, during the whole flood, on dry land on both sides of the river, there were 2 naval bases and they were never used." Was this in revenge for Governor Blanco refusing to turn over martial law authority to the Pillsbury Doughboy from Hell, Karl Rove, and the Clown Prince Child King and all. I know why I brought up the D.C. protest. It's because afterwards, a lot of people got sick. And even the Washington Post reported that they found a very high concentration of a rare but nasty flu called rabbit fever in and around the grounds of the march and the protest concert. This is what happens when we let people decide in secret who is a terrorist and who is not. Do you believe in Santa Claus? You should. He sees you when you're sleeping. He knows when you're awake. He knows if you've been bad or good, so be good for goodness sake. You know, it's not having to fear, always fear that someone who really doesn't like you and knows all your worst secrets and could break down your door at any time and your life is over, that is what we fought the Nazis and the communists for, to keep from happening so privacy or at least dignity and human rights could stay alive. Whatever the technology, it's important to draw the line in the dirt via the laws on the books that this sort of total surveillance state, sabotage, COINTELPRO, police state stuff on anybody who's against a war is automatically a terrorist, this is not cool. And the only people standing in the way of more and more and more of this is us. There was a lot of discussion at the privacy panel yesterday on whether or not polygraph tests are any good and how to circumvent those. But a lot of employers, well, those are expensive. They're machines. If you want, they don't need a polygraph test. They just cut off a lock of your hair to test you for drugs. Some of them even have you pee in a jar, but maybe that went out of favor because of the temptation just to say, you want me to pee in a jar? Fine. Piss in their face instead. You won't get to work there, but maybe that's a good thing. But now, no, we are protecting our precious faces from your precious bodily fluids. If you really want to work here, it's understood we even own your hair here. You have no rights at all. Here's the company phone that you will use that has a GPS thing in it so we can tell where you are at every hour of every day. Parents use locks of hair, too, to send away to mail-order labs to test their own kids for drugs and all. But take your Ritalin. You know, if you start getting belligerent, you must have attention deficit disorder. And phones can be tracked, and they have the radio frequency IDs, and in your clothes, in the passports, even in library books sometimes. One school district in Sutter, California, wanted to have every kid always have to have an ID badge on that had one of the tracking things in it. Well, that way, maybe no molester will kidnap you, but we've kidnapped all of you instead. Basically. And then Sony BMG was even selling CDs to people of popular recording artists without telling anybody. You put that into your computer, there's some little rootkit spyware that gets installed that monitors your Windows media software, and you wonder, where does that info go? Does it help them determine whether you've been file sharing? I mean, if anybody has turned file sharing into a scam, it's the major labels. It's the RIAA, who've sued over 16,000 people now. Even told one woman trying to put herself through MIT and didn't have a lot of money, well, you should just drop out and go to community college so you can pay blood money to your friendly neighborhood major label narcs. Not cool. They've gotten $40 million from these lawsuits. Where has the money gone? To the artists? No. Especially not the independent artists. Grokster shuts down, pays another $50 million blood money to the major labels. You know, did the artist get any of that? Doubtful. And if the Santa Claus at the NSA being the omnipresent everywhere isn't enough, you'll love Oprah. I mean, she reminds me more and more of Kim Jong-il. Her own picture is on the cover of every single one of Oprah magazines. We have to have our Oprah picture properly displayed in our home or bad things may happen to us. I mean, she's even gone beyond Kim Jong-il and marketing herself as a drug now. A feel-good mood enhancer. If you're down, you just turn on the TV or a DVD or an Oprah magazine. Oprah will soothe you with the answers to all the world's problems. Same time as they claim they're entitled to know more and more and more about us, we're allowed to know less and less and less about them. In 2004, the Bush mob spent $7.2 billion stamping documents top secret. That's a lot of documents. Even classifying documents that had been public for years. So now if you're caught with them and you got it from a library, oh, you're possessing classified documents, off to Gitmo you go. And they even, in the Pentagon, even censored a video on how to help citizens navigate Freedom of Information Act requests, which they all stall on now anyway. And then a while back, a journalist I'd known for years from the music censorship wars called me up and saying she was trying to write a book on FBI harassment of musicians and wanted permission to get my FBI file. Thought, ooh, this ought to make interesting reading. Then the FBI got back to her, oh, we don't have a file on him. And we don't have a file on the other one you just requested us for either. And guess who that was? Rosa Parks. So something's being blackboxed over there in a very, very, very big way. Meanwhile, you know, what also didn't help New Orleans or the rest of us is Homeland Security, dog and pony show at the airport and spying on people and Patriot Act or not, has become as corrupt as the Pentagon in less than 5 years. Tom Ridge, the first director, you know, that goofy car 54, where are you, kind of cop-looking guy that Bush put in, he left with his tail between his legs after a couple years there to go work for a company called Savvy Technologies and be on the board. They make the radio frequency IDs that the Homeland Security now requires be put in your passport to track you. Ridge writes it into law, then makes all the money as a monopoly selling the equipment to the government. 90 other Homeland Security officials have followed suit into the private sector. Ooh, terrible tragedy on September 11th. How can we scam on this one, basically? So, sure, you do have the dog and pony show at the airport. A lot of people who are groping you, they've never checked their background at all to see if they're ex-cons or might actually be a sleeper for some terrorist organization we should be afraid of. I just keep getting tempted with those people to show up, put through a carry-on bag. They open it up, and there's a smaller one inside. They open it up, there's a smaller one inside. And a smaller one, and a smaller one, and then the little one. Out jumps the jack-in-the-box that looks just like Osama bin Laden. Or a Bush in the box saying, "Don't mess with Texas, don't mess with Texas." But meanwhile, if they're that serious about Homeland Security, why is 90% of our shipping cargo totally uninspected? It's not as though technology ain't there. It just doesn't look as fun on television. Not so much Kiefer Sutherland macho going on if you're looking at them big shipping containers. But those are big things. If you can want to bring in a surface-to-air missile to shoot down an airliner, material to make a real dirty bomb and everything, although all you'd have to do is steal a shell coated with depleted uranium like we're using to poison the Iraqis and our own soldiers. Anyway, you could bring that in. You could even bring Osama bin Laden himself in a shipping container and have a 90% chance of success. He could be driving a cab downstairs in Manhattan right now. Or is he the ice cream man? Or is he the new tech support guy that you were forced by the company to train so he could take your job away? Yeah. And, you know, who decides who's a terrorist? Well, a translator in this town for that imprisoned Sheikh Omar Abdel Rahman, who was held responsible for that first attempted bombing of the World Trade Center in 93. Now a translator hired by the government, I believe it was, or the defense attorney, just to translate what the guy was saying, is now facing 20 years as a conviction for aiding a terrorist. In Iraq, we kidnapped a CBS cameraman and locked him up for a year in one of our gulags there as a suspected terrorist because he was filming a celebration that got turned ugly when the Marines started firing on people and killing them. But privacy is dead. Everybody's being watched. The other big question, of course, is what do you do with all the information? Does this mean we can finally have full employment and have half the people in the country watch the other half full time, or, you know, follow you around like your own guardian angel, maybe with a McGruff the crime dog suit on, and even in the bedroom protecting you from bad things and taking a bite out of crime and all that? We already had even had so much data before September 11th. There's thousands and thousands of pages of stuff that they got off of the Sheikh from the 93 bombing and others about what people wanted to do that nobody's ever had time to translate. Now how much of it we've got, and how the hell do you find a needle in that haystack? Especially when, if I put an Al-Qaeda hat on and got some very weird fanatical religious views, all I would have to do to screw up and hack that system would be to, you know, have everybody start chattering, mentioning key words about suicide bombings and things all over the phone lines and over the emails, and getting them all freaked out about something and putting a lot of energy into something that isn't going to happen. And the FBI has even said they objected to the torture tactics at Guantanamo Bay and in Afghanistan and Iraq, because it doesn't get very good information when somebody will say anything to stop you from torturing them. Anyway, before I forget, also in New Orleans, Bush also gave $125 million to Halliburton, another $200 to the Shaw Group that Joe Albaugh ran. I didn't see any of their equipment working down there anywhere. But I did see grassroots organizations like the Common Ground Collective coming up from the bottom, putting up the kitchens, women's shelters, media centers, rebuilding people's houses. Common Ground is even starting schools now because the government's not reopening them in hopes that all the poor people stay away. So if you want to help some people down there, there's commongroundrelief.org, emergencycommunities.org. Don't listen to Bush. He told people to donate their money to Operation Blessing, which is a charity that fronts for Pat Robertson, who uses half the money every year to go to the Christian Broadcast Network and things like that. You know, here's a terrorist. You know that long ago, before the Gulf Wars, Saddam Hussein was our golden boy in Iraq, right? You know, he was as evil then as he is now, but then he was our evil. And guess who was sent as a Middle Eastern envoy to seal the deal with Saddam Hussein that we would tilt toward Iraq? Donald Rumsfeld. There to genuflect to Saddam, shaking his hand on camera. You know, now we're going to give you an agricultural subsidy, as Daddy Bush and James Baker called it, to get all the material to make nerve gas. And he even gave Saddam a present as a token of our esteem, golden spurs. Which makes me wonder if we really got Saddam in that cage, trying him for war crimes and gassing thousands of innocent people made from material we sold him, shouldn't Rumsfeld and Bush's father be right there in the cage with him? You know, I'm not half as worried about the NSA spying on all of us as I am that how much we're losing our ability to find out about this stuff altogether. You know, it's not just right to privacy that's being chopped up and nibbled away as much as they think they can get away with. Draw a line in the dirt, cross it, draw another line, cross it, draw another line, cross it, and dare anybody to stop them. You know, also freedom of speech, access to information itself in the age of manufactured, censored corporate McNews, and also under assault is our ability to is our right to communicate. Sure, the First Amendment's fine. You can say anything you want as long as as few people find out what you've said as possible. Instead, you flip on the radio, TV, the commercial media, and the net, and the news, all right-wing all the time. Right-wing versus ultra-right-wing. Elections dumbed down to the level of pro-wrestling. Can't tell the news from Entertainment Tonight. I mean, they could at least do something like The Simple Life Goes to Lebanon. Survivor, Abu Ghraib. Regis and Kathy, live from Guantanamo Bay. But, you know, some of the things they dumb down and censor, I mean, this is the worst form of censorship going on today. When the New York Times has the NSA spy story before the 2004 election and sat on it for a year and a half to make sure it wouldn't cost Bush the election. Sure, they endorsed Kerry on their editorial page, but they made sure that Bush actually won, thus pleasing readers and advertisers and the bottom line at the same time, and didn't intend to let anybody know about it until one of their own reporters who quit was going to write a book about it, and when the book was about to come out, they had to scoop him. Then we find out. They also, according to Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, had a front-page story ready to go after the televised debates with Bush and, you know, Count John the Vampire and all, that, you know, that there was a lump under the back of Bush's jacket. Remember that? There was a teleprompting device to feed him the answers to the questions because he couldn't even get basic stuff right without, you know, Rove or somebody being the great and powerful Oz in the background. They spiked that one. Some people said, oh, that's too paranoid. That doesn't exist. And then the San Francisco Chronicle trotted down to the local spyware store and found the device available for $1,500. To me, explain, they just chanted a mantra in there, you know, no matter what the question was. What about homeless people? Fight terror, defend freedom. Fight terror, defend freedom. Fight terror, defend freedom. And, you know, within a few days it was spun around. No, Kerry didn't outsmart this guy. Bush was better because he stayed on message. No matter what the question was, fight terror, defend freedom, etc. Washington Post, too, withheld the names of countries where we've been secretly torturing people in their prisons in Eastern Europe because the CIA asked them to. Where is our right to communicate when you try and march on these political conventions or a lot of other things, and you're routed by the cops into a so-called free speech zone where there's nothing free about it? Nothing free at all. You're inside a little chain link fence, miles away from where the action is. Here's your little playpen. Say all those terrible things about your rulers, and then we'll forget about you. In Boston, there was even barbed wire around the top. The Democratic Convention cops and who knows what walking them all over on planks, just like you're getting ready to build the bridge on the River Kwai or something. And besides the RIAA suing all these people for downloads, repeatedly there's been a bill coming up in Congress designed to shut down people's access to information, right to communicate and speech, called the Media Marketing and Accountability Act. Well, its main sponsors have been Joseph Lieberman, oh yeah, and John McCain. You know, Mad Dog McCain, as I call him. But this bill says that there needs to be a federally imposed strict rating system, much stricter than the tipper sticker, explicit lyric parental advisory, rating sex, violence, homosexuality, other things in minute detail. And some sort of government censor organization decides how everything gets rated. And if you don't, anybody who refuses to use this rating, such as my label, Alternative Tentacles, all the products automatically become illegal. And then if you're caught trying to sell something without the mark of the beast on it, or using a wrong rating, according to some southern sheriff who wants to put his name in the paper, and this is a one-size-fits-all rating system for music, DVDs, games, and movies. And if you're caught that way, you're fined $11,000 per CD or DVD sold per day. Last time that bill came up, it had a new sponsor, Hillary Clinton. Yeah. And another one who's supposed to be our friend proposed clear back in 2002 at Carnegie Mellon University that computer makers should be required to have technology where the only way to turn your computer on is with your own personal ID smart card. Yeah, which of course is a two-way street. Quote, we must move to smarter license cards. License cards? You've got to get a license to have a computer like people in England do to own a television? Yeah, I mean, there's people who do 6 months in prison and have their kids taken away in England for failure to pay their TV license. And there's little vans that drive around with radar to see if anybody's watching an unlicensed TV. It's just unbelievable. And he also went on to say that, they have to insert the ID in before you could even log on. One state's smart card driver's license must be identifiable to another state's card reader, and it also must be easily commercialized by the private sector. Guess who proposed this? Howard Dean. Yeah. These people are not our friends. I mean, I really have lost patience with people who are so bummed out that John Kerry isn't president, even though he supported the Iraq War and voted for the Patriot Act and all that, too. Oh, we just got to put our heads in the sand and wait till 2008, and then Hillary will save us. That is not the answer. We don't deserve 8 years of rule by Darth Vader crossed with Bugs Bunny. No! What about the election in 2006? Even if you're disgusted with the cartoon characters of Tweedledum and Tweedledumber, the Republicrats offer up, local elections are where it's at. You know, it matters who's mayor, who's on the city council, and in many places, who's on the school board and their own personal relationship with God and how badly they want to ram it down little kids' throats and all. You know, they decide how to spend our money. Oh, a lot of homeless people. Let's build a football stadium. You know, we can prevent that by showing up and voting. And unlike Canada, unlike any country I know of in Europe, we have an extra special privilege called the ballot initiative. Referendums, where we can vote laws up or down at the local level. Medical marijuana, rent control, living wage. No, for stadiums. We need other parts pollution cleaned up and some affordable housing. Things like that. And so few people vote in local elections that the more of us that show up, we have a very good chance of getting good laws passed and good people elected. So we can reverse things like another one of the big attacks on people's rights to communicate. Has anybody noticed a rise in their town of cops busting people for the capital crime of putting up a little flyer or a poster on a telephone pole? Yeah, it's happening in San Francisco. There's a huge one I saw in Pittsburgh while I was there where some poor woman advertising an anti-war protest, they're trying to fine her $4,500 for 15 posters. And you can bet they ain't going to do that for a pro-war rally. I mean, this doesn't just impede people's ability to announce non-Clear Channel events, to announce non-Bush administration events and protests. You can't even find your lost pet in the neighborhood without being fined because a little bit of art on a telephone pole that's ugly as hell anyway just makes the neighborhood dirty? I don't think so. What was it? 2 months, 3 months after HOPE 2004, the FBI got British authorities to seize servers of Rackspace, and got a judge in Texas to comply with this too, and they were hosting over 20 independent media sites from at least 7 countries, and they all got shut down. As far as I know, who the accuser was and what their claim was has never been disclosed. Just, oh, we can't have that independent media. We're scared of that. We got to shut that down. You know, slowly but surely, trying to criminalize, and both in practice and in people's mind, the idea that of protest itself. The Republican convention here, 2004, New York Daily News got into the act with a whole front page splatter story, anarchists hot for mayhem. You know, get ready for a brawl. And of course, if the cops start a real one, it's justified because look at these ugly people in the mugshot. The guys from the Ruckus Society, people from Global Exchange, a lot of people who specialized in nonviolent protests were hot for mayhem. New York Post says New York's finest prep for anarchy. And then Ted Koppel got a hold of those pictures, maybe not even bothering to check the sources, announces on Nightline that 2 dozen, you know, the talking clamshell head and everything, 2 dozen particularly troublesome, even dangerous anarchists who infiltrate other groups and then try to provoke violence, which usually is the cop's job in this country, right? Infiltrate other groups to provoke violence. Well, I mean, what was he so afraid of? Somebody would kidnap his toupee and hold it for ransom on Al Jazeera? And following with that, has anybody noticed there's one hell of an attack going on another whole big terrorist secret cells in this country known as college professors. Ooh. And unfortunately, the people trying to dumb down education found their perfect poster boy in Ward Churchill calling innocent people who died on September 11th little Eichmanns, and then refusing to back down and just insisting on the language. I mean, if I'd been in his shoes, I at least would have said, okay, I didn't mean to offend innocent people, but this is what I really meant, and talk about our foreign policy the way people he wanted to focus on. But at the same time, he just gets vilified. He's probably going to lose his job soon. But when Ann Coulter says roughly the same thing, bashing the families of people who died on September 11th, hey, buy her new book. Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson say after September 11th that the people who died deserved it because some of them might be gay or supporters of the American Civil Liberties Union, or worse yet, non-fundamentalists. They just get patted on the head, and they continue to have both of them on the news, McNews shows as foreign policy experts. And all. Well, yeah, oh, yeah, bumping off Hugo Chavez, too.
We gotta get rid of him somehow. We can't even do coups right. We tried the Kissinger method, and I put in our own Pinochet, and it lasted 2 days. What are we going to do about that Chavez? He's exporting revolution.
Well, if all we want to export is sweatshops and Abu Ghraib, somebody better be exporting revolution. Now, Chavez is a mixed bag, according to people I know who've been there. His level of competence at keeping the infrastructure going and really getting poor people what they need is not necessarily what it's made out to be by people who, oh, he hates Bush, he must be the savior and all that. A little more complicated than that. However, one way to stick it to oil companies right now is there is one who buys all their oil from Venezuela and none of it from the Persian Gulf. Citgo. You know, they're not Ben and Jerry's, but it is something to think about. Yeah, they're also not ExxonMobil. There you go. There you go. But in the case of the attacks on Churchill, they're just using him as a wedge. People like David Horowitz, who's virulently anti-free speech, you know, they want to get as many other instructors knocked off as possible for failing a right-wing litmus test and being patriotically incorrect, especially run anybody off campus who even offers the most minute criticism of the excesses of the Israeli government. No matter what the Israeli government does and how many people they kill and how many walls they put up, which I think endangers their own country far more than terrorists could ever hope to, well, anybody points that out, you're automatically anti-Semitic and you should be fired. Horowitz put out a book, The 101 Most Dangerous Academics in America, including one woman who teaches peace studies and social justice at a Quaker school. Ooh! Whole website, discoverthenetworks.org, the patriotically incorrect conspirators, where you can report people for improper instruction in class, such as giving you an F for not doing your assignment or something like that. This even happened in high school in the rich suburb of Cherry Creek outside of Denver, Colorado, where a geography teacher named Jay Benish compared the Bush administration to Hitler and let the class debate him on that, you know, just trying to get the brains going and everything. But one right-wing kid whose dad worked for Disney taped him, and then daddy gives the tape to a right-wing talk show host, and before you know it, Rush Limbaugh's gotten a hold of it, Bill O'Reilly's gotten a hold of it, and that teacher is suspended. And the full tape revealed that he let this bratty little right-wing kid debate him the whole time. He was letting all sides be aired. Maybe that's why he got suspended. So now Sean Hannity is urging students to record left-wing propaganda by teachers so he can play it on his show and get, you know, a lynch the teacher Frankenstein monster where they charge back to the lab with the burning crosses and things like that. You know, even if you don't agree with what somebody like Lord Churchill says, at this point we've all got to rise up and defend these people's right to say things, even if they don't like them, because if one domino falls, then there's going to be more and more and more and more and more of them. Which brings us to the COPE Act. How many of you know what the COPE Act is? Interesting. Communications Opportunity Promotion and Enhancement Act. Otherwise known as the law that just passed the House of Representatives to wipe out the very idea of neutrality on the Internet. This is the net neutrality bill. They're calling it the COPE Act, a touchy-feely one, just like Bush's healthy forest initiatives to chop down all the trees and Help America Vote Act to force people to use monkey digital machines and all. And even when I first told Emmanuel I wanted to bring that up, his initial reaction, at least the way he put it then, and then now he thinks I kind of misinterpreted it, was, well, all it's really going to do is make it harder to stream visual and video footage over the net and more expensive. But I think it's a little more than that. I mean, net neutrality is a free press issue. And that means that there are no gatekeepers, public or private, with monopolistic and other powers. Net neutrality means when you pay for your net connection at a given capacity, you decide what you send. You decide what you receive and what you get to look at, not the company and not the NSA or the government. And if you like the government looking at this stuff, just wait till the government entity who's deciding what you get to know is AT&T. Or Verizon, who won't even let you use somebody else's calling card on their payphones at the airport. They're so greedy. Comcast, as if these people, the big phonies, let's call them the big phonies, as if they don't have enough money already. You know, they do have one thing in common. Whenever they swallow some other company, the service goes way down and the bill goes up. They all suck. You know, what they want to do is privatize control of the net, which is a public entity, into their own hands and finally cement that Al Gore wet dream he was promoting when he was vice president of toll booth, after surcharge to whittle down who can afford to have a site, who can afford to communicate, and who can't. I mean, the telecommies are these big Soviet bureaucracy-sized leviathans who can't really manage technology that well. They're too obsessed with swallowing more and more of it. So now that we got this stuff, we don't understand it, so let's dumb it back down into something we do understand. At least that way they won't scare us so much. We don't want to be the unemployed Zeppelin repairmen of the 21st century, and these netizens doing more and more work on the net, we've got to put a stop to that. So here we go. Fast lanes for corporations and phone and cable companies and a dirt road for everyone else. Big phonies can dumb down the net once this bill passes the Senate into one big sanitized Walmart. And the only free speech and commerce and expression allowed will be by Walmartian rules. You know, back down to the level of Ted Stevens. I mean, you may not know the name Kopach, but it seems like a lot of people know who Ted Stevens is here. And he's been throwing his power around and making these incredibly stupid statements and ideas for years and years and years. But let's assume he's right for a minute, and all the net is a series of tubes. After all, the CEO of AT&T said, well, we have to put it into law that the internet is our private pipes. Yeah. But why the hell should they be private in the first place? There was a Board of Supervisors guy in San Francisco, Tom Amiano. He proposed that since we've got to dig up all the sewers in the next 5 years, why not lay a public broadband network? So, and the city go into the business of providing the phone, the internet, the cable TV, the high-speed data transfer services to residents and break the private monopoly. People save 90% on their bills. And, you know, you can provide state-of-the-art technology to the police, the fire department, schools, hospitals, communication centers, finance, and produce local indie media. Why the hell not? Make it public. And then other cities have tried to set up their own wireless system instead to circumvent big phonies and the telecommies at all. So the telecommies just go to the state legislatures to get them to pass laws forbidding and restricting that in 14 states now. Cities have no power to do anything for their people because somebody we like might not make any money. It's always better in the private sector anyway, right? They're not really going to censor anything. It's just they want more money and we should give them to them in gratitude for stealing the net. Well, what happens when this is in private control and they can restrict the information is already going on. Maynard from Tool told me that right after Rupert Murdoch, you know, Mr. Fox News and all, bought MySpace, his anti-Bush statements disappeared from his MySpace site. That was interesting. Comcast has the cable monopoly in the Bay Area, and they just cut off FM radio service to Marin County, which was very important because of the hilly terrain where the houses are. It was the only way to tune in community radio. Pacific News, KPFA, they cut it off and just said, oh, it's a business decision. I mean, they can alter their service options at any time. You know, well, you can get Fox News really quickly, NPR maybe a day or two late, and we're blocking Al Jazeera, and we've decided to block everything from France because we don't like them. Freedom Fry, your access to France. Can't have anything from Venezuela or New Orleans or Lebanon. You know where this is really going, right? What they really want here is the same thing they want for everything else. The world should be run more like China. That's what they have in mind. You know, commerce, 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 money, 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 and lots of firewalls enforced in some very repressive ways. I mean, in China, government made a couple of news sites, Sina.com, Suhu.com, stop posting their any of their own viewpoints, and they had to only post the government's viewpoints. Forbidden to write about democracy, about sex, Tibet, Tiananmen Square, government corruption. Microsoft follows suit and bans the words democracy and Dalai Lama from the Chinese hosting version of its blog site. Yahoo even gave the Chinese government information to arrest a journalist for emailing information out of China. And another 100 people in prison for these laws, too. You know, economic boom or not, the whole damn country in China is a prison, basically. And that's kind of what they want. Yeah, we have to have more of a touchy-feely one here, though. Maintain the illusion of democracy and a one-party state masquerading as a two-party state. And if you get corporate McNett and get rid of neutrality, you get all kinds of new things, new shopping opportunities. It's so much fun to live in a police state when there's so many things to buy. And everything about my favorite public puppet celebrity is available for me instantly, and that's all I need to know. Yay! Well, sometimes we're not helping things, are we? For example, oh yeah, I talked to that person yesterday. Really, what did they say? Oh no, I just emailed them. Talking and sending an email are two different things. Communication is not made until the other person absorbs the message. That is what communication is. I mean, it amazes me that we're going to have to relearn this lesson from the days when we lived in caves. You know, instead of like just waiting, you know, I just emailed them. Send them another message. Didn't you get my email? Why aren't you responding? If you want an answer that fast, you want instant messaging, pick up the phone and call them. And you know what you get? You can ask your question, and they answer it. And then you can ask another question. Maybe even discuss things at length instead of, didn't you get my email? Over and over and over again. Duh! Why do we have to learn this lesson over again?
Ooh, I'm sending you a little text message. I'm 50 yards away from you at the mall, but I'm not going to talk to you.
Taking away our right to communicate. An ex-girlfriend of mine in L.A. told me she was at a club there, and a woman came up to her and chatted her up all friendly. They trade names. Oh, you're my MySpace friend. And then the woman walked away and didn't talk to her anymore. You know, she was only good as an imaginary person, not a real person. You know, granted, a lot of people do suck, and you can live out your little fantasy of who you want people to think you are on MySpace, but it's almost like instead of protecting privacies, now it's more like, I want to be on a webcam all the time to people I've never met. It's like the contrast between Hollywood, where movie stars go to great lengths to avoid anybody finding out where they live. Go to Nashville, and even in the Fleabag motels, there's postcards. Hey, come visit Bill Anderson's house. See the guitar-shaped swimming pool. Come one, come down, and all that. I mean, problem is, didn't it used to be that living in a world of imaginary friends was classified as a mental illness? I mean, I hope this tendency towards living in a world with imaginary friends isn't the reason that there's such a hugely disproportionate percentage of guys at this Hope Conference and all. You know, communicating with real people can even stimulate the imagination at times. But what we get with all this, sometimes, granted, there's some really cool toys coming out, and you can do all kinds of magical things with your phone, but you get more and more media and less media literacy. Whoa. I just saw a whole Bon Jovi concert available only to Sprint Nextel customers on my phone, and Bon Jovi was the size of a termite the whole time. That's so cool. Some of us want more out of life. I mean, you keep relying on smell phoning and text messaging and MySpacing out and constantly having to check your email, Facebook warming, and some spaz-induced fear you might be missing something. And then, keeping up with every little detail, you wind up missing everything else. Possibly things that are actually important. And instead, just living in your own virtual Las Vegas and making yourself way easier to manipulate. Oh, yeah. And I mean, a lot of people in this room aren't quite like that. I know that, but you may have younger siblings who are. You may already be parents or be parents soon. I sat next to a teacher on the plane coming out here, and she said that, you know, most of the kids in her class are just living in this virtual world cocoon where whenever she isn't looking, they put the iPod buds back in their ears, or when they're talking to their friends, they only take one of them out so they can constantly have the little bloops of stimulation going on and on and on and on. And she called it people so spoon-fed they don't have command of language and communication skills. This can be kind of dangerous, but then she said, if I love them up a little bit and talk to them and give them personal attention, they ache for that. They're very grateful for that. I mean, they can't be but they want to be stimulated all the time like little infants because they can't stand the silence. I mean, go to Europe. It's already not just in people's headphones. It's everywhere. Everywhere you go into a little market. You're waiting at the train station. It's always, doink, 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 you know, doinky doink music, kind of to soothe you the whole time. Here we've got those silent TVs in the restaurants. And no matter what's on, I keep taking my eyes away from who I'm supposed to be talking to and all. You know, keep that screen suckling going with the sizzling news bites and the talking Barbie dolls with the sound off. But we still gotta have it. Oh, we're putting it in the restaurant because everybody else already has it in the restaurant. You know, I personally deliberately almost never use headphones. If I'm out riding a bicycle or riding on an airplane or something, I kind of like to see what comes in. Silence doesn't really exist. Just ask John Cage, you know. So, you know, and what you get that way, at least what I get, is the random stuff I'm not expecting and I'm not looking for. You know, if I only hunt topics on the net I want to read about, I miss other things that maybe I should be reading about. I like surprises. You know, some of my best ideas come when I just let my brain float and all without even thinking about it. I mean, some people pay a lot of money to shrinks and gurus and cults to get to that state where they can just let their brain float. I think the reason that's so easy for me is I just forgot to unlearn it when I was a child. You know, just kept doing it. You're daydreaming again, but if I didn't keep doing that, how many of us would even be here today? You know, don't blame the kids for this either. It's the adults who are causing the problems. Like the parents. Like the parents who would rather throw the kid in the back seat, lower the screen down, and make them watch a DVD just so they don't have to talk to their own kids. After all, they're too busy text messaging and checking their cell phones and trying to email people in one hand, drive in the other when they're supposed to be paying attention to the road and all. Oh, of course you can have a computer in your room because then we can stay in your room and we never have to talk to you. You know, that's, and instead of, you know, nurturing the child when they're young, you go to the same spyware that had the little thing under Bush's jacket and buy a nanny cam. So you can spy on your child just so long as you don't actually have to take care of them and love them. I mean, parents talk about GPSing their children so they always know where they are in case they do anything bad. You know, what is that message to the kid? Well, my parents think I'm that bad, maybe I will be bad. Fuck you! You know, I don't care how important you are. You go on a vacation with the kids. Don't take the laptop, too. Spend time with your family instead of putting everybody, you know, oh, you can bring your laptop to grandma's house. Otherwise, you might get bored. You know, grandparents are a precious thing when they're around because they've got stories from back when they were our age that you don't find in the history books that are real interesting sociology. Some of the weirdest people ever may turn out to be uncles in your family or whatever. You never know. I mean, when cyber world is more important than reality, what happens when somebody brought up that way and doesn't have communication or thinking skills except for instant blooping and everything is in charge? We already have the example right in front of us of when someone's completely disengaged, bounces from one childish impulsion stimuli to another, something important, and looks no farther than
fight terror, defend freedom, fight terror, defend freedom.
He wasn't brought, made that way digitally, but it's the same kind of bred ignorance at work. You know, the red, white, and blue Caligula himself, George W. Bush. But I still can't get it out of my head, this vision that haunts me at night of him running around on the White House lawn or loose on the grounds of Camp David with a T-shirt pulled over his head like a cartoon character.
I'm the Ray Cornholio! I'm the Ray Cornholio! I need lessons of mass destruction for my bunghole!
You know, he says for his decisions,
oh, I just rely on instinct. I rarely read the papers. I just glance at the headlines to a flavor for what's moving. And then have somebody else tell me what's happening who may read the papers themselves.
And this is why we get things like, border relations between Canada and Mexico have never been better. He said that one this year and all. You know, we don't want an entire generation of chimp-like techno-bushoids running things. I mean, Robert Steele said 2 days ago, the public now has a digital memory. You know, and I'm not sure quite what he meant by that, but what I don't want to see is a digital fantasy world that erases people's memory or kind of melts down people's ability to have a memory. Forgetting our own history is why Iraq is getting even worse than Vietnam. Forgetting our own history, even a couple years later, is why polls keep coming back that a majority of Americans think Saddam Hussein bombed the World Trade Center. That's what happens when people don't hang on to their memories. So, but privacy is dead, and we should just accept that the United Snakes of America is already a nice, touchy-feely, Disneyfied police state where there's lots and lots of fun ways to shop and things to do. But we can still vote, so it's still a democracy, right? Well, I never thought in this day and age that one of the most important battles we're going to have to fight is for the right to vote, or at least to have our vote properly counted instead of disappearing into cyberspace and all, because some corporation with an agenda owns and operates the voting machines. Thomas Paine said that voting is the right from which all other rights spring. And Robert Kennedy Jr. in the, June 15th issue of Rolling Stone, of all places. Nobody else would run this article, apparently. A long, detailed article showing fact by fact by fact that King George II didn't just steal one election, he stole two elections. And both times, the top weapon of Ku Klux Bush was digital voting machines. You know, they're the only major democracy in the world to allow private corporations to count and tabulate our votes. And look what we get as a result. And Kennedy, you know, a real, authentic son of a dead Kennedy in this case, he pointed out this wasn't just going on in Ohio, but in Nevada, too. Two liberal-leaning counties got back 20,000 digital ballots where, for some reason, nobody voted for president. New Mexico, 20,000 people voted for everything else, forgot to vote for president. One county in Ohio, all these people voted mysteriously for Bush and gay marriage. How did that happen? How did an evangelical church in Ohio have a 97% turnout rate, while an African-American district in Cleveland have a 7% turnout rate? 50,000 people, again, not allowed to vote in Florida. In Ohio, he tabulates the number of stolen votes at 357,000. One of the main culprits, of course, is a company called Diebold, whose chairman even said, "I will deliver Ohio for George Bush," And boy, did he ever. I mean, they've been able to show that how you can just hack into a Diebold machine, change the results. People in Ohio reported pushing for Kerry, and then Bush would come up. Others reported seeing Kerry's name slowly disappear on the screen altogether. And, oh, what are some of the other ones here? One ward gave Bush 4,000 votes when 638 people voted. Yeah. And, the earlier when they first started introducing these machines, Boone County, Indiana, 144,000 votes, 5,000 people voted. 144,000 votes came in. Greg Palast documented how this was used to give Florida to Prince W. and Cornholio in 2000. Among other things, there was a precinct with electronic machines that turned in negative 16,000 votes for Al Gore. You know, William Rehnquist and his Supreme Court, Wild Billy Rehnquist, who was active in intimidating people of color from voting in Phoenix before he became a judge. You know, they said, oh, that doesn't matter. You're not going to recount that election at all. Besides, with most of these electronic machines, you can't recount the election. No paper trail, which Diebold claims is technologically impossible, even though their bread and butter device that they make is cash machines for banks that always print a receipt. Something weird with that, too. Gets creepier. Georgia, 2002, two Democratic candidates for governor and Senate were supposed to win by 12-16% apiece. Election day, they lose by 12-16% apiece. Why? The whole state was required by law to vote by digital machines, which meant now the guy they've got in the Senate is a lovely piece of work named Saxby Chambliss, who was so dirty, he criticized his opponent, Senator Max Cleland, as being soft on war, soft on terror, soft on national security, an all-around spineless pussy. Max Cleland is a triple amputee from the Vietnam War, while Saxby Chambliss is a George Bush Dick Cheney type chicken hawk who went out of his way to avoid serving in the military at all. That's real fucking dirty. It goes back even further, 1996, total upset in a Nebraska senatorial election, Chuck Hagel, conservative Republican, elected in an astounding reversal of the polls. Even the black districts around Omaha and all voted for this right-wing dude. How could this have happened? Well, the votes were counted on machines made by electronic systems and software, otherwise known as ES&S, and the chairman of the company and a major investor in ES&S at the time, guess who? Chuck Hagel. This is how dirty electronic voting can be, but another thing that really, really bugs me about this, so much that I have to blow some crap out of my nose. Ew. Hi! Wanna sell me on eBay? You know, what really flips me out about Ohio more than anything else, all this is going on, the Republicans even announced in advance this was gonna go down. Where was John Kerry? Where was John Kerry? I mean, granted, he would have been great in vampire movies. It's Christopher Lee and Peter Cushing aren't available for those anymore. You know, the low-budget 70s-style color ones. He would have been perfect for that. But president, when push came to shove, and the exit polls said he'd won by 7% in Ohio, and then mysteriously all this weird stuff turned up, where was Kerry? The toothless vampire couldn't even get out of his coffin, even at night, to stand there with all the people whose vote was robbed and blow the lid off on this for the whole country to see. At least he could have done it, said, yo, look what's happening here. Voting should not be privatized. Don't let that happen in England. They're talking about it. Don't let that happen in England or Canada or Germany or Switzerland or anywhere else. This is what happens. In Ohio, even in 2005, they got a ballot, an initiative on the ballot by petition to change the election laws and make sure this didn't happen again. And it was expected to win by a two-thirds majority. Voila, election day, it lost by a two-thirds majority on the very digital machines it was supposed to reform. The Columbus Post-Dispatch said it was the most astonishing reversal in Ohio history, but didn't go any further than that. I mean, and now there's even a guy who blew the whistle on Diebold in California. You heard of Steve Heller at all? I mean, this guy goes right up there with other hero whistleblowers and the EFF who's trying to defend him and others. You know, he was, I guess, word processing for a law firm and found all this stuff about how Diebold intended to lie about their machines to defraud the state of California. He slips it to some anti-Diebold activists and is now facing 4 years in jail if he's convicted for doing a patriotic act of blowing the whistle on corruption and all. And so keep an eye on that case through EFF. If you can, and everything. You know, I mean, I guess, for 2006, the Secretary of State in Ohio, Ken Blackwell, who some people call Ken Hackwell, because he made everybody buy the Diebold machines and everything, total fundamentalist Christian, too. He's running for governor, and he's in charge of counting the votes. So it's going to get even more interesting in Ohio this time. If you live in Ohio, get ready to hit the streets over this one. It's going to be wild. And the way to follow it locally, there's a publication called the Free Press out of Columbus, reporter who's also written books on Ohio vote fraud, Bob Fitrakis, F as in Frank, I-T-R-A-K-I-S, Bob Fitrakis. Keep up with him, lots of interesting things going on there. But here's where you come in. I've said this once, I'll say it again. The beauty of the people with the skills who bring them here is no matter what kind of obstacles the surveillance corporate police state throws in front of us, some bored teenager out there somewhere is going to find a way to hack and circumvent and sabotage the whole thing. So how many of you are as sick of the corporate national security state as I am? How many of you love your rights and privacy enough to get off your butt and do something about it? How many of you think our drug laws are totally insane? How many of you think the Iraq War is totally insane? How many of you think the FCC should worry less about us and Howard Stern and more about Fox News and the wannabe Fox Newses lying to send us to war again and again and again? How many of you realize that the very frontier of whether or not we will continue to have any kind of democracy and say in this country is voting machines controlled by corporations with an agenda, and this has got to be stopped now. So boy do I hope there is somebody out there amongst you who has the skills or knows other people who has the skills. This fall, go after those Diebold machines, the Sequoia machines, the ES&S machines, all owned by right-wing corporate extremists who's in their financial interest to sabotage our election system. If they can hack into those machines, surely so can you, and expose what's going on with them, and imagine what it's going to look like when all those reptilian punditoids on corporate McNews start spazzing out on election night 2006, just like Dan Rather did when he had to announce Jesse Ventura, the pro wrestler, was governor of Minnesota. That was hilarious to watch. Watch them all start freaking out when state after state after state who made the mistake of buying from Diebold suddenly elects Homer Simpson governor. That is your assignment for the rest of this year. You will be remembered in history as some of the greatest patriots of the people this country has ever seen. As they say in showbiz, let's roll. Thanks for listening.
Okay, Emmanuel, do you need to get the next panel going, or should I take questions? Because I know we ain't got a lot of time here.
5 minutes question?
5 minutes, and then I got to give up the stage to the next person and not be about it. So there is a mic there. I'll try to answer more than one question. Sometimes I'm a bit long-winded, but... Oh, wait a minute. I know what I want to do. Okay, I'll answer your question first, and then I know what I want to do. Okay, what is it? Oh, the mic's not. Yell at me.
It's all...
There it is.
It's almost more of a statement than a question. But first of all, the Howard Stern affair compared to Oprah Winfrey and what she says when kids are home from school is proof that the FCC should not exist. These people could run radio frequencies way better than some government bureaucracy, in my opinion. But I'm a libertarian. I know you're more from the left. Let me just say briefly, because I got stuck with a 9 a.m. talk, okay? So you got to give me some slack, that forgetting our history is the reason why money sucks these days. And I have a solution. Anyone can email me, oddsman@gmail.com, and I'm giving away honest money. I'll say that. Bye.
Honest money? Does Parker Brothers make it?
Brothers is a U.S. dollar. It's gold.
Okay.
You're talking about making voting work by getting rid of the voting machines?
Or at least having a paper trail so you can recount.
Carl Pearson is running for New York State Attorney General, and the big abomination is that the Building 7 has never even been investigated. We only need 30,000 signatures. He could go on the ballot, and that would be a beginning to support 9/11 truth candidates.
I do agree there needs to be more investigation there, although I also agree with Noam Chomsky and the skepticism that the CIA pulled the whole thing. I really find that hard to believe. When one of their major stations was right in the building they destroyed, you don't wreck good real estate like that. The Bush administration would have us right where we are right now, even if it was just the U.S. coal bombing or something. They were just looking for an excuse. So I'll look at the evidence as it comes out, but I'm not ready to believe
I'm
that the government killed the people.
No, I'm not even talking about any of that. I'm just saying an investigation on Building 7, that's all. The state attorney general wouldn't do it, the one that's in there now.
Oh, Elliot Spitzer.
That's all. Just investigate it. Just investigate it.
If you think Spitzer is the answer, just remember Giuliani was a kick-ass prosecutor, too, and then what happened?
Spitzer's not doing it. I'm just saying Building 7 is not in the Keene-Hamilton official conspiracy. That's
okay.
All. 30,000 is not much.
All right, one more, and then I want to read you something before I get the hell off the stage here.
Okay, Jello, I was really hoping... I still didn't burn my Dead Kennedys records. I will not do it. I'm a big fan of you. I appreciate what you did in the past. You're a great speaker. You're a great entertainer. But that you don't address 2 years later the evidence on 9/11 inside job is still disappointing.
The evidence on what?
The evidence that 9/11 was an inside job. You still don't address it. It's so mainstream all over the place. There are right now teachers getting threatened when they're giving courses on the evidence, the scientific evidence. Even the oppressed evidence, 9M TV fakery, is right now centered within the 9M Truth Movement. What you're doing is the same stuff what all left gatekeepers doing. You're addressing a lot of scandals, which are basically distraction from the only real thing we have to address. We have to get the complete Congress out of place. This is fascism. They're supporting World War III and V. It's already about the end game between U.S., Russia, and China. We cannot waste time with all these distractions of the week, which you correctly addressed. You're a great entertainer. If you're not doing it, which of these left gatekeepers will address it? It will be
many people already have, and as I said to the previous speaker, I don't entirely agree with
them. Okay, yesterday we asked a question, someone else asked a question to Robert Steele. He's really a big fraud. Okay, so someone asked him, did you watch Loose Change? He said, no. I know he's lying, but now what about you? Did you watch Loose Change?
Yeah, I hadn't heard of it either. He said he hadn't heard of it.
That's what I expected, because you telling the truth. He was lying. So we have it both ways.
I do my best to tell what I think is the truth, but the bottom line is...
I want you to wake up.
But I decide the topics and how I want to address them. I try the best I can, but I also... I don't want to go in over my head and start parroting other people's stuff about 9/11 if I'm not sure I feel like it's right. You may hear me agreeing with you in 2 years. I don't know, but I kind of try to go with what makes sense. I don't think of myself as a Marxist or a socialist or an anarchist or whatever. Every issue I have to vote on, I think, okay, what makes sense? Get rid of the labels. Okay, I got to read you this, and then I got to get out of here because we have another presentation coming up. It's a written piece. I used to do my spoken word shows that, unfortunately, I have to bring back now, but some of you may know this. Hey, you! You look like you're just the ripe age to be drafted. Does that bother you? Can't fight Iraq and Iran and North Korea all at the same time. There ain't enough troops. There was a sign at Jonestown behind Jim Jones's dead body, and it said, those who do not remember the past are condemned to repeat it. Those who do not remember the past are condemned to repeat it. Which would you rather sacrifice, your road hog or your life? Die for oil, sucker. Born on the firecracker 4th of July, raised on football and MTV, never felt what it's like to have to fight to stay free. Vietnam, just a Time Life book memory. The mask is off again, this time nobody cares, but you can't keep dancing with your legs blown away. Die for oil, sucker. 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 You too can get your face shot off, so Exxon and Halliburton keep their profits going up. The Cold War's over, it was all a mirage. We could use that money, we got problems to solve, but we're not allowed a chance to live and prosper in peace, because our president's sick with mad cowboy disease. King George never cared about 911 family's pain. How can we exploit this for financial gain? Cheney already had a handy map of Iraq's oil wells, pipes, and terminals they were scheming to snatch. Hijack all that crude from the Chinese and French, so we then have all their economies by the nuts. Then bring in the cronies to feed at the trough. Halliburton and Bechtel ripping everyone off. Never was to fight terror, liberate anyone. Set record oil profits, doubling 2 years in a row. This is what our soldiers are really fighting for. Die for oil, sucker. 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 It'll kill the poor, even faster than crack. Ship them out to war. Make sure they don't come back. Give them tanks that fall apart and helicopters that crash. Humvee armor they forgot to attach. Just like Tom Cruise in a wheelchair. Does our government support our troops? They don't care. Cut their pay. Yank their benefits. Go beg in the street. Won't even admit Gulf War syndrome exists. Some are coming home brain damaged, post-traumatic stress. Which one will be the next Timothy McVeigh? Die for oil, sucker. 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 Saddam, so egocentric, he even replaced Mickey Mouse on watches with his own face. For years he was our tyrant we thought we could use. We sold him his guns and his nerve gas, too. Now he and Bin Laden and Iran's Ayatollahs are laughing like mad because we're right where they want us. Sole superpower can't conquer Iraq, and it's costing so much, our economy's tanked. Washington generals are losing again. Now let's see how bad we can lose in Iran. Still think we can waltz right in, colonize their hearts and minds? The Islamic world's now so damn mad we may never get out of this alive.
Mission accomplished. We got the job done.
Take a country that ain't a terror threat, turn it into one. Bush is wrong. They don't hate us because of our freedom. They hate us because we won't let them have any freedom. We promise democracy. Give them Abu Ghraib, phosphorus gas, and Fallujah. What are they supposed to think? 3 dozen terror attacks in 2003, 3,000 in 2004. Does anyone still think the War on Terror, Inc. has made us any safer at all? W draws his pom-pom and cheers, bring them on! Leaves troops like sitting ducks for insurgents to bomb. See how he smirks and turns up his nose as he sends away more who will never come home. Landmines, suicides, kill more troops every day. A hint from the locals that the longer we stay, we're the ones in harm's way wherever we lay. And we'll pay and we'll pay and we'll pay and we'll pay. Die for oil, sucker. 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 What's so sick about this is there's a better way. Stop selling guns to dictators and Israel. Don't need to keep ourselves hostage to oil when cars and trucks and who knows what can run on biofuel. Road rage swine won't give up SUVs. By law, let's make you the first draftees. Go get your own goddamn oil. It ain't up to us to protect your lifestyle. Running the world like our sweatshop can't last. Climate change and terror is biting us all in the ass. Think they like their kings who sell us oil? Think of the cost to keep our army there. When the only way left to bleed oil out of the ground is soldiers' guns treating Arabs like slaves. And like Hitler and Stalin, we put people in camps. Torture them in secret like our pal Pinochet. What are we letting ourselves become? Abu Ghraib reserves back home were prison guards. If this is what they say is funny over there, what are they planning for us over here? Like Milosevic or the Nazis, when they're gassing gays and Jews, too many who know what's up, give up. There's nothing we can do. Like hell there ain't, and if we don't, who will? We know our rights, so more than ever, use them now. There's two superpowers. Just one's the USA. The other's resistance all over the world that will not go away. We stopped Vietnam. We won our civil rights true. So burn your draft card, burn the flag, and burn the Pentagon, too. On TV, it's a feel-good tabloid war. No bodies, no wounded, no funerals, no gore. Fake reality show where we always win. So much yellow ribbon that we're hanging ourselves. That's what's so different from ugly Vietnam. Media that brought that war down's been bought out. Mickey Mouse, Fox, and GE all redline the news. Their job's to sell weapons. They distort what we view. Pentagon parrot pundits won't admit we exist. What that says to me is their owners are scared. That we are as strong as we've been in the past, and we will stop this war and their globalization scams. Yellow ribbon McCarthyism can't hold us too long. We support our troops most when we say, bring them home! So be all you can be. Say no to the Army, Air Force, Marines. Get off your butt before Bush blows it off. Don't die for oil. Don't be a sucker. Thanks again to Hope and Emmanuel for having me and everybody here for listening. I gotta get the hell out of here because we're running into somebody else's time. Take care.